So by way of introduction, we'll have to learn some chumash here. There are two parshiyos that will come up here at the beginning of this parak. One is Ki Tesei in Dvarim, and that's the case of Ma'anes. So that's a case where a woman was taken and violated against her will. What's common to this and the case of Mafata, which is in Parshas Mishpatim, where she was seduced and she had ratzon, is that in both cases we're dealing with a nara. So a nara, as we know, is 12 years old and she has shtei saras. She becomes a bogeres at 12 and a half. So that half a year, that 6 month period, is what we're dealing with here. So the Torah says the following. Ki yimtza ish, a man finds a naira besula. Okay, so here's another condition. It's not enough that she's a naira and she's 12 years old, she has shtei saras, but she's also besula. Asher lo orasa, so she's not married. If she's married, we're talking about a capital crime, an eshes ish. Utfasa. Right, so tfasa means that it's against her will. B'shachav ima, and v'nimtzo, so there are edim that testify that he did such a terrible thing. V'nasana ish ha-shochev ima la-viha nara. So this is a reflection or an application of the general principle of binureha beis avia, which is in Parshas Matos, that as long as she's a nara, she's under the domain of her father. And therefore, v'nasan, when he pays the penalty here, it's la-viha nara. Now, part of the parak that we're going to learn is to discuss unusual cases where she herself could collect the penalty money. But as a general rule, he, the father of the nara, collects the money. The question is going to be if he dies, whether or not in such a case he pays the nara. But if he's alive and well, he collects the chamishim kesef. Again, it's interesting, it doesn't say what the currency is. It just says kesef. Kesef is a general kind of thing. Then there's something called shkolim. That's going to be specified in the other parasha. That's back in Mishpatim of Mufata. So here it says v'nosan, he has to give l'avianara chamishim kesef. So that's as far as the knas is concerned. Then we have another part of the pasuk of this parasha, v'lo siya l'isha. And this means that whether he likes it or not, he has to marry her. And not only that, the Torah says, Lo yuchal l'shalcha kol yomov. Now this is fascinating, because in Hilchos Gittin, he's the one who decides whether he wants to give a get. And she has no say in the matter. On a Doraisa level, I'm talking. All this was changed mid Rabbanah, but on a Doraisa. Here is a case of a marriage where not only is the marriage against his will, but he has no option on his own decision to divorce her. So that's the part of the comparison here that makes it into a contrast. In other words, there's certain basics that are very similar in both this parasha and in Mefata, in Mishpatim, but the real difference lies in the second half. That's the lo sealish that he has to marry her, whether he likes it or not. Not only that, lo yuchal shalcha kol yom. And I know some of you were with me when we learned Makis. Do you remember back in Makis we spoke about Lo Yuchal Shalcha Kol Yomov? Because the question is whether this is a Lav Hanitak Liesei. Let's say he goes and he divorces, so does he get Malkis for that? And the halacha is that he has to remarry her if he divorces her, so that might be a Lav Hanitak Liesei. Okay, but now we compare this.
Why would a woman want to marry the person?
Oh, so if she refuses to marry him, then he doesn't marry her. But if she wants him, she may feel that she doesn't have another option at this point. You know, he's defiled her and so forth. So that's what the Torah says. He doesn't have an option of backing down from the marriage if she decides that she wants to marry him. And now we have the Parsha Mafata. So this is also in Perkov Beis. It's interesting. Before we were learning Perkov Beis in Dvar. Now we're learning Perkov Beis in Shmos. V'chiyafata ish besula. Okay, so here again we're talking about a besula sharlo orasa. She's not married, but she agreed to have this relationship. V'shachav ima. And then the Torah says, Kesef Yishkol. Now the word Kesef Yishkol, the Yishkol means Shkolim. And we're going to see in our sugya that there's a gzeirah shavah between these two parashios to teach us that just like in the case of Mefateh, the penalty is to pay Shkolim, so too here it says in the parasha Ma'anes, it says that he has to pay Kesef, but it doesn't specify which Kesef, it's going to be Shkolim. On the other hand, here it doesn't say how much Kesef Yishkol. And here in Ma'anes it says Chamishim. So the Gzeir Shavah is going to go in both directions. So the number of, you know, the exact value is going to be derived from Ma'anis to Mafata, and the exact currency is going to be derived from Mafata to Ma'anis.
In either case, the Torah tells us whether that's in the case of a Megaris or a Ketana.
Oh, so that's going to be our sugya. What's the deal if she was a Ketana or she was a Bogeris? And that's going to be Machlokas Tanoim.
The Torah itself doesn't give that case.
The Torah, now in the case, right. It doesn't mention Nara in this context of Mefateh in Parshas Mishpatim. It does spell out Nara in the case of Ma'anis. In fact, it says Nara twice here. The Gemara is going to point out that there's a superfluous word here, Nara, because he starts by saying Ki Yimtza Ish Nara, and then he says V'nosan Lavia Nara. He didn't have to repeat himself of Lavia Nara. So that extra Nara is going to be very important because we're going to use it to reflect on the parasha Mefateh, that even though the Torah spells out in both cases it's a besula, but in the case of Mefateh it doesn't spell out that it's a Nara besula, and that we're going to derive from the parasha Ma'anis. Now, is the Torah saying only a Nara? It's only during that 6 month period? Or even a Nara, meaning from, let's say, birth until she's 12 and a half? So that's going to be Machlokas Tanoim. Now when I say birth, what I really mean is she's got to be at least 3 years old, because if she's less than three, she's not a bas bia. Now here the Torah says that mahar yimharena lo leisha. The word mahar is a reference to what? Anybody remember? I give you a hint. It's the name of our mesecta. It's the ksuba, right? The mahar here is a reference to ksuba. And this is going to be fascinating because this would really indicate that he has to pay 200 zuz. But wait a minute, he's not paying 200 zuz, he's paying 50 shkolim. The answer is that there are two different payments over here. One payment is a penalty for the maisabir. The other is in the marriage relationship, for the ksuba in the marriage relationship, he's got to give masayim zuz. What's the kiddush that he pays masayim zuz? What was the hadmin to say that he would pay half that amount?
She's
a bu'ula. And a bu'ula only gets 100 zuz. So here the Torah is saying, no, you can't get, you know, he can't give me a chote niskar. You know, he's gonna have a relationship with her, and then he's going to
pay less.
So this is also, again, part of this gezeira shavah, because the Torah doesn't say in Parashas Ma'anes that he has to pay the full ksuba of a pesula 200 zuz. That's going to be derived from a fat. And it's almost a kal v'chomer, actually, because if he doesn't, you know, at least in the case of Mefateh, you'd have a havmina that he should pay for a bu'ula because she agreed to this, she consented. In the case of Ma'anes, why should she lose the ksuba of a b'sula if, again, Brian, in the strange sense, so she wants to marry him? But then it says, Yima'ein avil lasiso le'isha. Now notice that in Parshas Ma'anes, it doesn't say a word about the father refusing the marriage. On the contrary, all it says here is lo si alisha, that he's required, he's obligated to marry her. On the other hand, in the case of Mefateh, it doesn't say that he's required to marry her, which means that there may not be any chiyuv to marry her because he didn't violate her, he seduced her. Now, in both cases, apparently, the father could reject this and say, I object to this marriage. Now, if we were learning Masechta Bava Kamma, we would find out that we're only seeing part of the picture here. Because there's a whole other part of the picture, and that's called the Zikin. So there's what's called a Knas, and then there's called Nezik, Tzar, Ripui, Shevis, and Boshes, meaning Be'ila. Let's take the case of Ma'anis. That's easier. Mafat is a little more complicated. But the case of Ma'anes, the Gemara Bava Kamma is going to establish that in addition to the penalty that he has to pay for the Maisa Onus, there's also the general payments, which is called Nezek. For example, her value is now less than it was before. So that's called Nezek. Can anybody tell me what the difference is between the two? What do you say?
She's no longer a
ksuba,
so she's Matayim.
Well, no, Matayim is the ksuba. Forget about the ksuba. They're not getting married, okay? She doesn't want to marry the shalom, you know, and he... Okay. But what does he pay in terms of compensation? So we have two categories now. We have Perek Shlishi, the third Perek of ksubas, and that's going to focus on the Chamishim, Shkol, and Kesef. And then we have Masechta Bava Kamma, which he has to pay Nezikin. Now, what's the difference between the two? I'm not talking in monetary terms, in terms of how much he has to pay. Could be the Nezik will exceed beyond the 50 shkom, right, or it'll be less than 50 shkom. You have to see.
Right.
It might change and fluctuate depending on the case. But I'm asking, what's the difference between these two payments conceptually?
They both go to her?
They're both going to go to the father because Binu Rebbe Samfiyah, but they're fundamentally different kinds of payments. Are you with me on this?
Yeah.
One is
a knas.
Excellent. And the other is? What's the opposite of knas? Mama. Right, one is mama and one is knas. Yeah. So for example, ain't govin knasos bebara. Right? For in order to collect a knas, you need what's called a basin shel smuchin. That's not true for nezikin. I give you another nafkamina. This is the most basic nafkamina. Mode of the knas is potter. There's a third nafkamina. A knas can only be established by Bezdin. There's no chiyuv to pay a knas before Bezdin actually issues the psak. That's not true in Ezekiel. In Ezekiel, I only need Bezdin's help, because otherwise, how am I going to get you to cough up the compensation?
How are they going to quantify it? It's quantified. None of the five heads.
Oh, okay, so for that, you'll have to learn Perikach Chovel and Bava Kamma, how to quantify it.
We
need
to do therapy.
Right, you know, you have to know exactly how to come up. But I'm just saying, in terms of categorization, we're talking about two different worlds here that are overlapping. Through this Be'ilah, in the case of Ma'anis at least, and then we can talk about Mafata, he's going to have to pay two different payments. One payment is a knas, and that's written in the Torah itself. The other payment is Nezikin, because he's an Adam Amazin. But the difference is that whereas this payment is a set payment, which is called Dover Katsuv, that makes it into a knas, the payment of the Zikin from Bava Kamma is not set. It changes and it...
Who gets the knas?
All monies that come to a Nara accrue to the Hafar.
But the Nara is till 12.
That's called Binu Rebbe.
The Nara is until 12 and a half?
Correct.
12 and a half.
Correct.
Let's just say, okay.
That's set. You know, that's not malleable. You
12
know?
Is based on the idea that she's a Gedola and she's Saros. And
correct.
That's the 12.
Correct. 12. And now half. We wait 6 months, she's a Nara, and then it's 12
and a half. If this happens at 12 and a half and beyond, then the money goes to her.
Her. And not only that, there's no knas. The whole 50 shekel is gone. All he has to pay now is the Zikin.
Why doesn't he have to pay the knas?
Torah says the knas is for a nar.
I accept it, but I mean...
Philosophically, I can just tell you that, you know, the status of a nara is very critical. You know, once she's a bogeres, she's sort of already part of society. But to really, you know, in a sense, undermine her status when she's a nara, this maisa bia has a terrible, you know, terrible impact on her.
But
you should know. Brian, you're learning Masechta Sanhedrin now, are you not? So you know that the Torah is very sensitive to the status of a Nara. The Gemara in Sanhedrin establishes, for example, that in the case of a Bas Koin Shezitza, then she gets Srefa. It's a very severe punishment. And when? Only if she's a Nara. You know, again, you know, you can write a whole treatise on the status of a Nara in Halach. There are special dinim in Nidarim, in Masechta Nidarim of a Nara, that don't apply to Bogeret. So the Nara is a special status. But I'm going to ask you a different question. What's the role of Bezdin? Yesh Lachkar. Two definitions of Bezdin. One definition is that, look, I can't force you to pay up. And I can't take the law into my hands. I know that you owe me money. I can't go into your, you know, break into your house like a burglar and steal the money. I have to go to Bezdin. I have no recourse to get my money through Bezdin. Bezdin here is functioning to oversee that once my evidence is clear that you owe me money, you'll pay me that money. Or Beis Din itself creates the chiyuv mamon. And until Beis Din gets involved, there's no chiyuv mamon at all. What's going to be the nafkamina?
If somebody's willing to pay.
The nafkamina will be modeh b'knas. In the case of modeh b'knas, which means that a person comes into Beis Din, he says, I admit that I did this terrible thing and therefore I owe the knas. Modeh b'knas is potter. And Beis Din will not create that chiyuv. In the case of the zikin, your hodah is, it's very nice that you were modeh, so you save a lot of, shall we say, legal fees, you know. But on the other hand, your hodah is worthless in terms of saving you any payment. There's a compensation, and you have to pay that compensation. In case of penalty, in the case of a knas, modeh knas is potter. But it goes even beyond that. At what point in time does he have to pay X and Y? Compensation and penalty. He was ma'anis a besula, a nara besula. He has to pay 50 shkolim kesef, and he has to pay, let's say, 50 shkolim in damages. They're two different shkolim. One is called a knas, the other is called mamon. In the case of knas, that chiyuv to pay knas doesn't emerge until Beis Din, how do you say, puts down the gravel, what's it called, the gavel?
Yeah.
The gavel, you know, that after the Psak Beis Din, he becomes chayav. Not before. By the Zikin, the chiyuv is immediate with the Maisa Hezek. It could be a long time in the process until Beis Din establishes that he has to pay off. But the chiyuv is immediate with his Maisa Hezek. So I'll give you an example. What happens if the man was Ma'anes a Nara Besula, and between the time of the Maisa Onis and the time of Beis Din, in that period of time, until the Psak Beis Din was handed down, the father died. Here's going to be the difference between Knas and Mamon. As far as the Zikin is concerned, the Chiyuv emerges immediately with the Maisa Bia, the Maisa Hezek. But as far as the Knas is concerned, that Knas is not Chal until it comes to Beis Din. So if the father died between...
Would have to pay Knas.
The whole precondition of this Knas is gone. But that's only because it's Knas. So again, Rav Osi, that's what I want to just, you know, it's before you start this parak, it's kedai to know the Torah Shebal Peh, the Torah Shebetzav. The Torah Shebetzav is two different parashios, one in Kiteisei, one in Mishpatim. They both incur a knas of 50 shekel. In both cases, the possibility is that the marriage will take place. In the case of Ma'anis, the Torah says he has to marry her, whether he likes it or not. Again, if she refuses, that's a different story. In the case of Mafata, there's going to be a mutual consent. Oh, here's another difference that I forgot to tell you. Slipped my mind. We said that there are two payments. One payment is the 50 shkolim knas, and the other payment is nezikin. But when does that apply? Only in the case of Ma'anis, only in Dvarim Perkov Beis, right? Because there she has a right to sue him for damages, so he has to compensate her for damages. Not so in Parshas Mefata. There won't be any nezikin at all. There'll only be the knas. Why is there no nezikin?
Because
she consented. If she consented, then that's not a chiyuv mas. So, for example, if I tell you, you know, I for whatever reason, you know, hit me over the head or hit me over the back, you know, I can't sue you for damages. So the whole distinction that we had with these two categories is only applicable in the Parsha Ma'anis. There's no application in the Parsha
Ma'anis. Even if you consented, it was still considered to be a rape. I mean,
no. See, that you're thinking from a Western culture.
Yeah,
you know, there's something called statutory rape, right?
Yeah.
But in halacha, it doesn't work like that. And I'll be honest with you, Brian. In this case, I side with the halacha, not because I'm a rabbi.
No,
I'll tell you why. Because this whole business that a young child is not responsible for their actions, which is a Western mentality, is not right. It's really not right. a child reaches a state of maturity at a certain age. You can't tell me that it's statutory rape with a 17-year-old girl, you know, who consent. Well, it just doesn't make any sense. You know what I'm saying? What I'm just trying to say is that according to Halacha, a Nara has the din of what's called a Bar Das.
Right.
Again, it's true that she's still in her father's domain, and therefore he collects the money. But she is an agent. She's not a minor anymore. So her das, in the case of a fata, becomes what you call in Hilchus Nezikin a mechila, and therefore she has no right to sue him for damages. Not so in the case of ma'anis, because there she's victimized. And there was no mechila at all, and he has to pay damages. So he's going to pay damages b'toras nezikin. That's bava kama. That's called compensation. And then he's going to pay the knas of 50 shekel, which has nothing to do with bava kama. That has to do with ksubas perek shlishi. And that's common to both ones and mefata. So even in the case, it's fascinating. You see, I want you to see this, Brian. It's not, you know, even though we're saying that at the age of 12, she has shtei sar, she's a gedola, she could be mocheles, but that doesn't completely exonerate him. Because he made her into a ba'ula, and for that he has to get punished. The punishment is going to be the payment of 50 shkola. So again, it's very strange. On the one hand, as far as compensation is concerned in Hilchus Nezikin, the fact that she consented to have this bia removes any chiyuv and any rights that she has to force him to pay up for Nezikin and compensate. But as far as the knas is concerned, that's engraved in stone. And even though she agreed to this Maisa Pitu, it's still considered what? It's still considered a chiyuv knas of 50 shekel. In fact, at what age can a woman get married, according to Allah? At the age of zero. Because the father can marry off a woman. You see, Western culture doesn't recognize such a thing.
Man, are we too young as people who think we like ISIS here, you know? No, unfortunately.
You mean that a father can marry off his daughter?
Daughter at the age of naught.
Why is there the distinction between this halacha and the general halacha of a 12-year-old being a bardas and being a gedola, and in other words,
again, there's a certain element of violating a woman and the Torah is very machped about.
No, but in other words, generally, at the age of 12, not 12 and a half, at the age of 12, you're considered bardas.
Right, and that's why hamachila is meaningful in the case of a fata.
In terms of chiyuvei mitzvah, right? That
right.
So why don't we just work with that age? What are we doing with this half a year? I'm just confused. Why this half a year?
This half a year where she's a Nara is relevant to many, many different halachas. The Torah tells us that a Nara has a special status with regard to Nidorim, with regard to her ownership rights, with regard to her relationship to just 6 months.
Why does the Allah create this confusion?
I get back to Brian's question.
Why does the Torah make this? It just sounds confusing. In other words, I grew up thinking that a 12-year-old girl
is a gedola. That's because you're...
Because I'm a balabat.
Yeah, you're not sensitive to... You can spend many, many months learning many different sugyas and shas about the status of a Nara. And all those sugyas collapse into 1 6-month period.
Okay.
In the case of Ensorah Morah, for example...
Yeah.
Again, there are various opinions, but the final ruling is it all collapses into how much of a period of time?
In those 6 months?
3 months. From the age of 13 till the age of 13 and 3 months,
that's
he can become a Ben Sorumor.
Boy and girl?
No, a girl, there's no din of Ben Sorumor by a girl.
Okay.
That itself.
Bas Sorumor.
Yeah, there's no Bas Sorumor.
Okay.
The Rambam tries to explain that, but I don't think he's necessarily succeeded.
Okay, so the Ben Sarimor, you're saying, is another example of
where the Torah has a special period of time.
A special period of time of a few months.
Okay. Yeah, just like you're used to thinking about the first 3 years of a girl's life, that after she reaches three, she's capable of beer.
Right.
And then we think in terms of a young boy, the first 9 years, as opposed to when he becomes Ben Tess, then he's a bar beer. And then when it comes to Das and Chiyuv Mitzvahs and Mechila and all the monetary responsibilities and those laws, you'd say for a girl it's 12, and then for a boy it's 13. So all these different age brackets and distinctions lead us to a category called a Nara.
Okay.
And in the case of a boy, he hits 13 and that's it. There is no middle stage. But in the case of a woman, there's 12 and then there's 12 and a half. Right. And that middle stage means that she's partially dependent upon her father. She's still in his rishus.
And again, in other areas of halacha, we don't make that distinction. In other words, in terms of chiyuvei mitzvah,
Chiyuvei mitzvahs is 12 to a girl, is 13 to a boy, 13 to a boy is 12 to a girl, whichever way you want.
And in terms of, generally we speak about das also.
And again, that's not relevant. Nara is not relevant.
No,
but saying
right.
Das, you know,
this is what I was saying.
But where is it relevant? It's relevant to, number one, monetary payments. Because during that 6 month period, all monetary payments accrue to whom? To a father. It's relevant to Kiddushin. She cannot be Makadish herself for those 6 months, even though she's a Bardas, without her father's
so rishus. That's the question.
Again, what happens if her father's dead? Right. That's a whole other story, because then we go back to the classical Das, that she's already a Bardas at the age of 12. Nedarim, she took a Neder, and she's 12 years old and one day, and she has Shtei Saras. Is the Neder valid or not?
Not until 12.
Depends what her father says.
Right.
If her father proves...
Just within those 6 months.
Six months. If her father proves... Six and a half, 12 and a half, the father's out of the picture.
He can't be made for anymore for 12 and a half.
Correct.
What happens when he's 12?
He made for means he can't, can't invalidate, nullify the death. So I'm just telling you the status of a Nara is relevant in many different areas. When you get to Bas Kohen, you'll see that Nara becomes a separate category.
So this is the question where it's sharpened a bit. In other words, Das sets in, and yet in these areas, full Das does not set in. In other words, somehow there's...
Right. It's a middle stage.
There's a middle... Even though Das sets in Edus or in some other area, you know, or whatever...
Well, Mechila would be our
example. Okay, Mechila.
Meaning that in the case of Pitu... In the case of...
But in a certain Edus, she does have...
So I would assume that, for example, if an Isha is believed in Isurim, that would take place at the age
that's
of
right.
12.
It happens at 12.
I would assume.
You know, so
I don't know.
Certain Das sets in and certain Das doesn't set in. There's a gray area.
Yeah.
That's a bit confusing.
Yeah.
That Das happens at 12, and then in this area of halacha,
maybe instead of Das, we'll say Rishus Avir. Let's put our emphasis on that.
But that's also
that the father doesn't remove himself.
I hear what you're saying, but just
until she's a bogeir.
Just those 6 months.
Yeah.
I mean, that just
until she's a bogeir.
I guess that's
right. Let's leave it at that. I think that'll be that's oversimplified, but at least for our purposes, that's fine. Now, the Perek starts with a more advanced discussion. It's almost as if, you know, the Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, when he authored the Mishnah, he didn't bother giving us any background material. You know, he almost assumed that we know everything except for one thing. What don't we know when we learn the Mishnah? What we don't know is the relationship between the two parts of this parsha. As we said, there are two parts of the parsha of Ma'anis. There's one that's monetary, penalty that he has to pay. And the Torah is quite clear, he has to pay 50 shkolim, and it's paid to the father. Fine. But then there's the marriage element here. Namely, that he is forced to marry her if she so agrees. Well, what's the relation between these two parts? Because on the one hand, when it comes to the knas, one could argue there should be no restrictions, there should be no limitations. In every single case, he should be paying the knas. But it's not fair to say that in every single case we can force him to marry her. Because not every man can marry every woman. So let's say the man raped a woman, Rahman al-Itzlan, right? And he's not allowed to marry this woman. So the second part of the parasha, v'lo siya le'isha, which forces him to marry, obligates him to marry her, doesn't kick in.
Right.
What about the first part? Does she collect knas? Or is it a package deal? That's going to be the subject of our Mishnah. Do you see how advanced the Mishnah is, you know?
It'd be strange to say that that's a package deal. I mean, that's, I'm just saying, balabatish of time, why should that be a package deal? If there's some exception to the rule here, why they can't marry, that's the exception.
Or let me even ask you a more fundamental question. Let's say he's not allowed to marry her. Right? But yet, the Torah says, v'lo ti elisha. That he has to marry.
Is that override?
Yeah. Then you get into issues like esse dochalosa.
You have to pay the consumer.
Could it be that what the Torah is saying is that if he has this relationship of onus where he violates a woman, and there's such a severe avera in and of itself, forget about the fact that he raped her, right? That's the Beinonam L'Chavero, the ethical element. But forget about that. The fact that he had this relationship with a woman that he's not allowed to marry, that itself means that he's worthy of a very serious punishment. Now, when it comes to punishments, we can basically speak about two categories of punishments. And a third, at least Bidei Shamayim. The two punishments that are bidei Adam are what? Mises Bezdin,
no.
Or Malkus. The third punishment, which is bidei Shemaim, is called Karis. Now, we have a rule that goes as follows. If you do an action that's a criminal action and generates two different punishments, one punishment is, we'll call it a corporeal punishment, leaving out Karis for just a minute. So we're going to beat the living daylights out of it, you know, 39 lashes. The other punishment is a mammon, is a knas, you know, some sort of financial penalty. Then what's the deal in such a case?
Kimle.
You got Kimle with the rabbi. Now you give him the more severe punishment. So we're going to give him Malkus, let's say, and he doesn't have to pay mammon. Okay, that itself is a sugya unto itself. But one thing that's crystal clear, according to everyone, that if it's a capital crime, is we'll give him Misa, but he doesn't pay financial penalties. That's called Kimle the Rabine. So now I can reformulate my original question, and Aaron, I can avoid and circumvent your objection by saying that I have to know the relationship between these two parts of the parasha for another reason. Because not only can he not marry this woman because he violated such a terrible Isur, we'll call it an erva, right, relationship. But moreover, we're going to put him to death because of the violation of the crime. Now, what would be a classical case of an erva relationship? Let's say achoso, but there it's only a chiyuv kares. So if there were Edom and Asra, he gets Malkus. If there's no Edom and Asra, he'll get Karis. Do we apply the principle now of Kim Levi the Rabbi Yune? And the first part of this parasha, namely Chamishim Shekel, is completely omitted, relieved. Why? Because he's getting Malkus. And if there's no Malkus, then he'll get Karis. And then the question is, do we apply Kim Levi Rabbi Yune in the case of Karis? It's going to come up right here as well. So without further ado, you know, let's start it. Elu naros sheyeshlem knas. Now, the Mishnah doesn't even have to address the classical case of a nara that gets a knas. The Mishnah is going to talk about cases where there's an avera that he violated because of the relationship between him and her. So the first group in the Mishnah is called Bamzeres, Nesina, and Kusis. Okay, now Nesina and Kusis are a little bit more complicated, but let's just talk about Mamzeres. So Mamzeres means that she was born from an illegal relationship. Now he's not allowed to marry her. Nobody's allowed to marry a Mamzeres except for a Mamzer, but he's not a Mamzer in this case. I mean, you could call him a Mamzer, but he's just technically not a Mamzer. He deserves to be one, right? Now, he's not allowed to marry this woman that he raped.
Right.
But if he does so, what kind of a punishment is he fit for? Malchus, because Habala Mamzeres is a regular classical violation of a law. So there's no Kares and there's no Misa.
And you don't pay Mama.
So the Mishnah says in this case he has to pay Mama. Why? Because the Mishnah is of the opinion that a Chiv Malchus is not enough to trump or to, how should I say, to void the Chiv Mama. But had she been, let's say, Imo, which is a Chiv Misa, then he would not pay Knas. Now, what's Nesina and what's Kusis? So this is complicated. Nesina actually goes back to the time of Yoshua and then later to the time of David HaMelech. The Nesina gave us problems in two periods of time in Jewish history. Now, initially, Yoshua comes conquering the land. And everybody is, you know, the Canaanim are, pardon the expression, pissing in their pants, right? Because the Jews are really powerful. Halavai in our generation, right? I remember times when our enemies used to run and leave their shoes. But unfortunately, they became more sophisticated with their arsenal and so forth. But anyway, so now what happens is this group of people called the Givonim decide they're going to pull a fast one on Yoshua, and they come and they say, we came from afar and we're not Canaanim, we don't belong to the land, and we'd like to convert to Judaism. And then Yoshua enters into a bris with them, and only later on he finds out the bad news that this was a whole fakery, this was a ploy. So there are two issues that come up with regard to Nesina. One is, do we recognize their geirus? Is it valid? And that's called Geri Arayis, which means Arayis with an Aleph, not with an Ayin, which means that that they were misguided out of fear, not because they were motivated to become Jews. And what's the status of that Geirus? That's a very complicated issue. And then, even if I assume that the Geirus was valid, nevertheless Yoshua put a whammy on them, and he said, no one's allowed to marry them. So they have a very special status. But again, it's not a status of a Chiyuv Kares, and certainly not a Chiyuv Misa. And Kusis is... Now that all I discussed before was at the period of Yoshua. Yoshua actually put a whammy on them that was limited in time. And after the Churban, it would no longer apply. And David HaMelech was so upset with these Givonim Nesinim that he made an absolute prohibition. So these Nesinim can never enter into the Jewish fold. In that sense, they're worse than a Mitzri and an Adomi, because the Torah says about Mitzri Avoni Dor Shlishi Avohe. You know, after the first, you know, let's say a Mitzri is Misgayer, so there's a Mitzri Sheni and a Mitzri Shlishi and so forth and so on. Then we get to the case of the Kusim. Now the Kusim settled in the northern part of the land of Israel after the Golus of the Aseres HaShvatim, and the Melech Ashur brought these guys in to settle in the land, and then all of a sudden the lions started attacking them, so they were afraid that maybe they should become Jews, because they figure if they're living in the land of the Jews, you know, then the Goyim appreciated that this was the land of the Israelites. So maybe we should be misguided. But they also were never serious about the Gerus. They continued worshipping idols, a whole Sugin Chulin about the mountains that they used to serve, and then Yonah on top of the mountain, and all this stuff. So these were the Kusim. Once again, we're talking about a violation, but it's no more severe than a Mamzeres. That's group number one. Then we go on. Now we have a case of Haba al Agioris v'al Shvuya v'al Shifcha sheniftu v'shen isgayru v'shtachru p'chusos b'bnos shol shanav yom echad. Here the deal is, the issue is not with regard to can he be married to her or not, but whether she's a besula. So as a general rule, a goyita has a chazaka of a be'ula. However, in this case, she became Jewish before the age of 3. So even if there was some sort of promiscuity, but it was before the age of three. And in such a case, she still retains her status as a basula. So the bia of a pachos miba of a pchusa mibas gimel does not change her status to a ba'ula, and therefore the parasha of chamishim shkolim still applies. Then we have the case of a shivcha shenish takara. Shivcha is also a goyita, but when she becomes a shivcha, she has gerus, and that gerus is complete with shichrur when he gives her get shichrur. And if he gave her get shichrur after the age of three, we assume she's a ba'ula, and we suspend the parsha of knas. If, on the other hand, he gave her get shichrur before she reached the age of three, then she's still becheskas besula. And the same thing applies to a Jewish girl who was born Jewish, and she unfortunately was victimized before she reached the age of three. So in such a case, she retains her status as a besula, and therefore he has to pay the knas. Then we get to the third category. This is already chiyuve karis. Now I'm not sure why the Seder Advarim, the Mishnah, put the middle group as a wedge between the first group and the third. I would have done it in a different system. So that has to be understood. But the third group is made up of Achoso, Achos Aviv, right? Achos Aviv. It's interesting. An uncle, let's say, I can marry my sister's daughter. In fact, the Gemara says it's a special mitzvah. Right. It's a special chiba, you know, bas achoso. But the other way around, right, for me to marry my auntie, who's my father's sister, that I'm not allowed to do, that's a chiv karis. Then we have achos imo, that's another auntie, that's his mother's sister. And then we have his sister-in-law. Now, achos ishto, as long as his wife is alive, is a chiv karis. The Al-Ashis Achiv, right, that's another sister-in-law, the wife of his brother. Al-Ashis Achi Aviv, which means his uncle's wife. The Al-Anida. So all these cases grouped together are all Chayvei Krisus and Yeshlem Knas. And the Mishnah goes out of its way to point out the Afal Pishayim Bekares Ein Bahem Mises Bezdin, meaning the fourth group would be made up of emo and the like. In such a case, he would not be paying the knas because we're going to put him to death. So, Kim Lev the Rabbi Minei, according to our Mishnah, does not apply in the case of a Chiv Malkus like Mamzeris, does not apply in the case of a Chiv Karis like Achoso, and it only applies to a Chiv Mises Bezin. And we're going to see that that's not universally accepted. There are those Tanoim who would apply the principle of Kim Levi the Rabbinei not only to Achiv Misa but even to Achiv Kares, and even more than even to Achiv Malkus. So this whole Mishnah is very tenuous. Now there's another chiddush in this Mishnah, and this comes back to Neil, to your point before. It says Elu Naros. Elu Naros means that this only applies during that 6 month period of time. That itself is very tenuous. That's also going to be a tremendous machlokas.
What's the last sentences of the Mishnah telling us?
No, the last sentence is to tell you that we've gone up the scale from Achiv Malkus in the case of the first group to Achiv Kares, but we haven't gone up to the highest level of Achiv Mises Bezdin, because in that case she would not collect the knas. And the reason she doesn't collect the knas is because the Kimlev Ramine, we're going to put him to death. Now the Gemara very naively assumes that when it says Elu Naros Sheishlam Knas, it's only these Naros. So Gemara says Hani Naros Psulos. Meaning what's common here to at least group number one and group number three is they're all Psulos, meaning he's not allowed to marry them. Is Hani Naros Psulos Islehu Knas Ksheris Lo? Are you telling me that if he marries a woman, he rapes a woman, Nara Besula, that he's allowed to marry, so he doesn't pay knas hachi kam. This is what the Mishnah means. Elu naros psulos sheyesh lem knas. These are naros that, despite the fact that he's subject to a severe punishment because they're psulos, nevertheless he has to pay knas. Abba mamzeres, hanasina, vakusis, etc. But surely if he comes and he rapes a kshera, for sure he has to pay knas. Then the Gemara says, Nara in Ketana lo? The Mishnah only mentions a Nara. It doesn't say a word about a Ketana. What happens if this girl that was raped was less than 12 years old? No fee of knas. Man Tana, which Tana is that? Or Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Rabbi Meirhi. So you should know, says Rabbi Yehuda Marav, that our Mishnah reflects the Shita of Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim never accepted the Shita of Rabbi Meir. So the Chachamim are learning the parasha a lot differently. The Chachamim are learning the parasha that she's a Ketana, and even if she's a Nara. If she's a Ketana, he pays Knas, and even if she's a Nara. Rabbi Meir says only if she's a Nara. And our Mishnah reflects the Shita of Rabbi Meir. The Sanya we learned in Ebraisa, Ketana, Mibas Yom Echad, Atshetomishte Saros, Yesh Lo Mecher, V'yein Lo Knas. Okay, so this is going to be the view of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that there are two halachic ramifications to the status of a woman as a Ketana versus her status as a Nara. One is called Mecher and the other is called Knas. Mecher means what we call an Omevriya. So if you ever learned Masechta Kedushin, you know what I'm referring to. It means that a father could sell his daughter as an Oma, and that's only for a 6-year period of time. There are many different ways where it'll never pan out to 6 full years. For example, if let's say the father sells her at the age of 10, how long will she be an Oma? Only for 2 years, because once she becomes a Nara, she immediately goes free and she's no longer an Oma. By the way, keep in mind that an Oma is not a Shivcha. An Oma is someone who, if let's say the master has only one pillow, who does he have to give the pillow to? He has to give it to her. An Oma Vriya is really a monetary kind of relationship, but as far as ethics are concerned, she has the regular status of a Jewish woman. In any event, according to Rabbi Meir, the age or the category of the woman in the relation between Mecher to the father's right to sell her as an Oma and Knas, the father's right to collect the Ma'anis, the penalty of the Ma'anis of 50 shekel, it's an inverse relationship. Is that how you say it in English, or a converse relationship? I always get confused. Inverse. In other words, if there's Mecher, there's no Knas. If there's Knas, there's no Mecher. So Mecher goes up until the age of Naros. Once you have Shtei Saros, there's no Mecher. Not only is there no Mecher, but she goes out free if he sold her before that age. And once she becomes a Nara, there's no Mecher, but there's Knas. And Rabbi Meir says these are two mutually exclusive. There's no overlap. So it means that up until the age of a Nara, there's Mecher and there's no Knas. From the age of Nara until she becomes a Bogeris, there's Knas, but there's no Mecher. And therefore, our Mishnah says, Elu Nara sheyesh lam knas, there's only a Knas and a Nara. You'll ask me, what about a Ketana? The answer is Ketana is Mecher. So the Torah, in a sense, gives the father two different rights. He has rights to collect the money when he sells her as an Omevriya. He has rights to collect the Knas in a case of Ma'anis. And the Torah says, according to Rabbi Meir, that the father is equipped with one of these two rights, but not both. You can never have an overlap of both.
Is that Svara or Mara?
So the Svara is the following. I don't know if it's a Svara in the Balabatish sense, but the halachic mechanics works like this. According to Rabbi Meir, when the Torah says that a girl who's an Omevriya goes free when she has Shtei Saras and 12 years old, Rabbi Meir analyzes it the following way. He holds that it's not the pshat that the Shtei Saros, what we call Simone Gadlus, is mafkia, the kinyan of an Omevriya. That's like an automatic pigeon or a freeing of her. No, what he understands is that it has nothing. It's not a din in the Shtei Saros. It's a din in her status as a Nara. What's the difference between saying that she goes free because of the Shtei Saros, or she goes free because Narus and Amhus are mutually exclusive? Right? So the nafkamina is going to be that, let's say, just 1 second, what did I want to say here? If she's a Ketana. All right, it slipped my mind right now. So, but according to Rabbi Meir, the fact that the Torah gave the father rights to mechira, to be mocher haris and amivria, that means because he, the father, doesn't have rights to collect the knas. As soon as his rights for mechira terminate, then he loses his rights to collect knas. I think Rashi might add something here. Rashi says, Elon Mecher, the Kesanya Yochel Yimkar Odmes Bitok Shinara. I might think that a person could sell his daughter when she's in Nara. Amit Kalvachomer, Mechura Kvar Yotza is Ashav Shane Mechure no Din Shaloti Mocher. You know, it's if she's already been sold, it takes more of a power to terminate that relationship, that status as an Omavriya. And yet, when she becomes a Nara, she goes free. How much more so that he can't sell her as a Nara? In other words, it's not the creation of Simonim that blocks and undermines his rights as a father to sell his daughter, but rather Naras itself removes Mechar. There's a stira here, the contradiction between Narus in that state and Mechira La'omivri. So even if the simonim took place before he sold her, the sale is invalid because of narus. It's not a din in the shnei simonim that the simonim narus amafkia the omavriya situation. No, it's more than that. It's not just telling you that she goes free at that point. It's telling you that narus is mufka from the sale of the Nara as an Omivri. What takes over after Nara sets in? That's called Knas. But there's no overlap. So that's according to Rabbi Meir. Ktanu Ivasa Chad V'ad Shetovish Tei Saros Yesh Lo Mech V'en Lo Knas V'Shetovish Tei Saros V'ad Sheti Boger Yesh Lo Knas V'en Lo Mech. So therefore the parasha of Knas that we read earlier in Parashas Ki Teiseh only applies going to Rabbi Meir in Nara, 6 months. Chachamim omrim ktano mibas sholosh shanav yom echad ad shetiboger yesh lo knas. Once she reaches the age of 3 and the Torah recognizes, the halacha recognizes her bia, then he's chayav a knas. Up until when? Up until 12 and a half. So both Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim agree that once she's a bogeris, there's no knas. The Torah says nara. The chiddush is that according to the Chachamim, it means not only a ketana collects knas, but even a nara collects knas. Whereas Rabbi Meir understood the parasha as saying only a nara collects knas. Now it comes out that according to the Chachamim, there's an overlap between Mecher and Knas. That's what the Gemara is going to point out now. Knas in Mecher lo, Ema af Knas b'mocho Mecher. So the finish of the Torah is that we're going to clamp upon the Ma'anis a Knas, and the father is going to have rights to collect a Knas, despite the fact that the father also at the same time has the rights to sell her as an Omavriya. So it means that according to the Chachamim of Rabbi Meir, the halach of Knas begins at the age of 3. And the chiddush of the Torah is that even though she's already a Nara, there still is a din of Knas. When she becomes a Bogeres, there's no din of Knas.
Is Mecher still limited to 12 and a half?
Mecher is up until 12 and a half.
Yeah.
There's no machlokas about the fact that the father could sell his daughter. No. What did I just say? I'm sorry. Again, Mecher starts with the age of 0 and goes up to the age of 12. Knas starts from the age of 3 and goes up to the age of 12 and a half. And then there's an overlap between Mecher and Knas from the age of 3 to 12. Okay, now I got it. Now we start a new sukkah. So the Gemara says, "Vahani bnei knasa ninu." The Mishnah lists all these psulos that he's not allowed to marry, and the Mishnah establishes that he has to pay knas. Vamai, how can you tell me that he pays knas? Ikri kan velo tiela isha isha haru uyalo. In other words, the Gemara now assumes that although there are two parts to the parasha, one part is that he has to marry her, which it doesn't apply in any of the cases in our Mishnah, you know, the first group and the third group. And then there's another part of the parasha that he has to pay knas. The Gemara assumes that it's one package deal. It's all about talit. And since the Torah says in this parasha, "Velosi Elisha," that he has to marry her, and that doesn't apply in the case of an Isha She'eda Ru'uyalo, because he's enjoined from marrying her, then therefore he shouldn't be paying knas either. Amar Reish Lakish says we need a special drasha to establish that even though he doesn't marry her, he still pays knas. And this drasha is going to come to exclude the Hava, meaning that it's one indivisible package deal. What's Reish Lakish's drasha? So if you remember, I pointed out when we read the parasha that there's an extra word nara in the pasuk. And Reish Lakish says nara, nara, hanara. Which means that there are two extra words here, so to speak. Literally, there's only one extra word. But Reish Lakish sees it as two extra words. Why? Because there's a hey at the beginning of Nara, and the hay is not part of the word, so he reads it as Nara and Hanara, as if they were two psukim. So Nara, the first Nara, is Legufe. Legufe means to tell you that she's a Nara. And then there's another Nara which is superfluous, and a third Nara that's superfluous. Chad la suye chayve lavin, v'chad la suye chayve krisus. So again, if we only had one extra pasuk, we would only include chayve lavin, because that would be the minimus chidush. But now that we have two psukim, we extend it even beyond that to chayve krisus. And what the Torah is telling me is that despite the fact that it's not an isha ru'uyalo, and therefore the mitzvah of marriage doesn't apply, but nevertheless the knas does apply, and kim levi the rabbinate doesn't apply, because there's no chiyuv misa. Now a papa is going to derive the same identical conclusions, but not from the parish of Ones in Kitetze, but rather from the parish of Mafate in Mishpot. Rapapa Omar Besula, Besulos, Ha Besulos. So let's again open up to Parshas Mishpatim. And it says here, Kiyafate Ish Besula. And then it says at the end, Kesef Yishkol, Kimor Ha Besulos. So now the word Besulos is extra. So we have one word Besula which we need. That's called a Gufe. And then we have Besulos which is extra. And we have Ha Besulos, which makes it into a third extra pasuk, the extra hay. So Rav Papa says, Chad legufe, chad lasuye, chad milav, chad lasuye, chad mikris. Back to Gemara, Rav Papa, by time alone, Reish Lakish. Why didn't Rav Papa accept Reish Lakish? Because of the drasha of Abaye. Hahu, the extra pasuk nara in the parasha of Ma'anes, is necessary to teach me the derivation of Abaye. The Omer Abaye, Ba'aleha umesa pot. The father could only claim and sue in Beis Din for the knas as long as his daughter is alive. He becomes, in a sense, the representative of his daughter. But if she died, he can't collect the knas. This would not apply to the nezikin part, because the nezek, the compensation, is incurred immediately at the point of the onus. What happens later is irrelevant. And the father now collects that compensation on behalf of his deceased daughter. So that's what goes on over here. So what did Abai say? Boleo mesa potash and everyone nosan lavi hanara. The Torah adds the extra word hanara to teach me that she's alive, and then you pay the father. He needs the extra word habsulos for gzeir shav. Remember, I told you that all the dinim are derived from one parsha to the other. Okay, there are both sides, but we'll stop.